Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to the March 19th edition of the PFF Forecast. We've got a little trade action happening today. Brandon Cooks, we'll talk about him going to the Cowboys, Laremy Tunsil signing a very lucrative deal to stay with a very bad team in the Houston Texans. What does that mean for OBJ and DeAndre Hopkins? We'll talk about some landing spots for them. And then we'll get into some March Madness, some Formula One, and some draft props, although we are still anxiously awaiting more of those to come out. It's going to be a great show. Let's rock. Arjun, you've got two of the most just beautiful brands gracing us today. Little printing press hat, little Air Jordan logo on the chest. So welcome back to the pod. We missed you on Wednesday. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. Watched my first F1 race today. Like we talked about before the show, broke the golden rule of betting on Ferrari and got burned. Won't make that mistake again, but it was... It was truly a privilege to watch Max Verstappen go from 15 and end up at 2, which I thought was just amazing by him.
I had him at plus 170 to win, and it almost perfectly played out. I mean, my whole thesis was that he was going to breeze by everyone because Red Bull just had such a better car, and that ultimately it would be close enough where the dynamic of the teams would come into play. And Christian Horner would say, "Hey, Sergio, thank you for showing up, but we'd like Max to win this race." Didn't quite pan out. And I should have remembered how good Sergio has been on street courses. He won in Monaco last year, which I actually bet he was 10-1 or 11-1 in that race. Ferrari is just, I mean, between Ferrari and McLaren, just well-known names, just looking like complete dog shit. There it is. You burn the hat.
Burn the hat.
Okay, so let's get into the Brandon Cooks trade. So Brandon Cooks has now been traded. Brandon Cooks is like, trying to think of like the best analogy, but it's like the girl that everyone wants to date in high school, but never actually wants to like go out with for a sustained period of time. Dude has just been to every team. He's been traded for, and it's always coveted. He's highly coveted. This time, not quite the same return that he's gotten for teams in the past. Obviously, he's getting a little bit older. But the Cowboys trading a 2023 fifth-round pick, 2024 sixth-round pick to the Texans for Brandon Cooks, whose grade has dropped each of the last 3 years, but you know, still fast receiver. Let me start with you, Brad. Just looking at kind of the value that they had to give up for this trade, did you like it?
I mean, just a fifth and a future sixth for a guy that, yeah, look, he's gotten worse the last couple of years, also been playing with Davis Mills and other quarterbacks in Houston. Just over the last 3 years had a cumulative 82 receiving grade, which is solid, top 30th position, still just under 2 yards per route run. He had 66 explosive receptions. All these numbers are top 20 among wide receivers on an awful team. And yes, there's also the counter of he was the only receiving option and probably getting force fed to a degree. So it kind of balances both ways, but I still do like this move for Dallas. A, because the compensation, you give up a fifth and a sixth after you make Houston pay $6 million of his remaining salary in 2023. So You inherit a 2-year deal for $29 million on a guy who's going to be 30 and then 31, I think. So old, but not like ancient. And we haven't seen him play meaningful football in a long time. Probably relatively fresh, relatively healthy. Obviously a Bears hero for his week 18 performance, but you know, so I do think it's a good move. The last piece is, if you told me of the available options, who would you like most in an offense with CeeDee Lamb? I would say Brandon Cooks, a separator on the outside downfield, wins deep and can take the top off of defense and then let CeeDee feast underneath. So I think it's a great move for them, for Houston. I mean, look, I do think it's funny. Yes, he's been traded 4 times now, ties the NFL record with Eric Dickerson. Sure, you can say, does no one like him? You also could be like, well, you better be pretty darn good if you're going to get if someone thinks you're worth a trade 4 different times. But for Houston, they were going into the last year of his deal last year. Give him a 2-year extension. They pay an additional $12 million to have him on the team last year. If you fold in the $6 million they pay this year, they take on a $22 million dead cap hit for trading him. Actually becomes, I think, the second player ever to have two $20-plus million dead cap hits either. But just like Houston, I want to buy in. I'm trying, Nick, in Houston, and D'Amico, I'm trying to buy in. But I don't know what you're trying to do there. And then, yeah, getting a lot of business done on a Sunday. Jack would never go for that. So, no. Things are changing in Houston.
No, the Easter Bunny would not approve. Would not approve of that kind of Sunday interaction. Literally going to the marketplace and, you know, with the trading gold coins for meat, just unacceptable. The Cowboys plus 175 to win the NFC East. Eagles plus 105, Giants plus 550, Commanders are plus 1,000. I'm not going to mention what the tax collectors in Houston are at this moment. Here's, I think, something interesting, and I'm sure, Arjun, you've got some better data to bring up here, but I'm going to do my best. I looked at the highest graded players lined up out wide last year for the Dallas Cowboys. So CeeDee Lamb grades better in the slot than he does out wide, but he played nearly half his snaps out wide last year, just kind of out of necessity because they had no one else out there. T.Y. Hilton had 46 snaps out wide. He was their highest graded receiver other than CeeDee Lamb. I'm not really going to count him because he barely played. So then you go all the way down to Michael Gallup, had a 61 PFF grade lined up out wide, 473 snaps. That's just not going to get it done. If your best receiver needs to play in the slot, play him in the slot. And Brandon Cooks, it's interesting. You look at what he did last year, 4 drops in his first, I think, 5 games of the year. Didn't have a drop the rest of the year. Had a couple of games over 70 PFF grade down the stretch. So you can make a case, like you said, Brad, like just played on a garbage team and can sort of get it together when needs to. So generally, I think it makes a lot of sense. Arjun, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think the deal makes a lot of sense for the Cowboys. So, you know, I'm going to read off Brad's tweet. It's basically a 2-year, $29 million deal for the Cowboys. So we're looking at a $14.5 million APY. When you factor in the picks, you know, you're probably adding a couple million if you convert the picks into, you know, dollar value. So we're probably looking at like a 2-year, $16 million deal, which, you know, I think that's fair value for Brandon Cooks. Like, we don't really know how he's going to fare. He, you know, has kind of regressed a little bit. I did think the kind of like interesting thing about this deal is everything lines up with the rest of the receivers on the roster from a contract perspective. So CeeDee Lamb only has 2 more years on his rookie deal. Michael Gallup is in year 2 of a 5-year deal, but based on his contract and looking at, you know, a model I built to predict how long a player plays on his current contract, my model only expects Gallup to play 3 years of his five-year deal. So CeeDee, Cooks, and Gallup are all expected to end their contracts in the same year, on top of Dak's current contract also expiring in 2 years. So you have this like 2-year window, I think, where Dallas is not pushing the chips all in, but kind of just reloading and restocking their roster. And add this along with the Stephon Gilmore trade, and I kind of really like how they've kind of leveraged some of their late day 3 picks to kind of get some veterans who are on some, you know, not so great teams, and to really like bolster kind of their depth at those important premium positions. So I also agree with your point about how they needed to get another out wide guy. Michael Gallup kind of underperformed in his role last year, and Noah Brown basically went to the Noah Brown and Brandon Cooks basically switched teams, and they needed more production out wide. And I think Cooks does have the versatility to play in the slot if necessary. So I really like this move for the Cowboys, and I'm not saying I'm going to buy them yet over the Eagles, but I'm definitely liking their chances of winning the NFC a lot more.
Real quick on the draft pick point, real quick too. We always hear, everyone always says that day three picks are useless and they're meaningless. You're never going to get a good player. They just used a compensatory fifth to get Stephon Gilmore, and then actually had 2 fifth-round picks this year because of a trade I'm blanking on, and used one of those two to get Brandon Cooks. Like, every pick matters, and every pick can get you really good players. And in today's NFL, a lot of these trades now, I mean, obviously they give up Amari Cooper for a fifth-round pick. That's probably the fifth they just gave up. So Cleveland's fifth, but still, like, every pick can turn into an asset. It's how you wield it. It's how you go about using it. And I think they were smart in how they did it.
Especially if you're willing to pay, like, that's the other thing, right? Is contracts to good players that you owe a lot of money when you're a bad team are like, you know, a ball and chain, right? So you can take advantage of those situations where you have kind of different incentives across the team that's trading one player and the team that's receiving it. So I think it's interesting that you bring it up, Arjun, because I really like the moves. Okay. Now it's setting up for this beautiful situation where they trade up, get Bijan Robinson, everything, you know, works perfectly the plan. Assuming that's not what they do, they are in a situation where I think you compare them to the Eagles, and it's interesting the moves that they've made, right? So they bring in a Stephon Gilmore. You know, if he gets one more year of top, I think he's capable of top 10 cornerback play still. But that matchup against the Eagles is really interesting, right? Because they have two really great wide receivers in Smith and Brown. And then you think about what they're trying to, the Eagles secondary is very strong, right? They got Slay back, Bradbury. There's a lot of things that they can do there. And so it's interesting. They're kind of molding their team to be able to try and beat the Eagles, which I think makes sense. Like, I think that's a smart move. I'm not ready. I am tempted though. I am tempted to take them, you know, at plus 175. Eagles will have a much harder schedule this year. I don't know. The only thing that really scares me is the Bijan thing and just Mike McCarthy calling plays. I gotta be honest. That, like, if it was Kellen Moore at plus 175, I think I'd rip the Cowboys right now. Mike McCarthy calling plays, running Bijan Robinson into the center of the line. I don't know if I can do it.
Do you feel better though that Brian Schottenheimer's there to help him out? Does that make you feel
yes,
more
definitely
that makes you feel better? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, it's a fair point. It's a fair point. I think I gave it out a couple weeks ago. I said I think it was around plus 200. Not that I foresaw a Stephon Gilmore or a Brandon Cooks move, but again, a perfect example of, like, you knew one team was probably gonna add and one team was gonna be subtract you know, talent this offseason. Yeah, Eagles did pretty well to bring some guys back, but the market has, you know, adjusted towards Dallas. And I'm just saying this kind of tying this into a different point, but If you're into the NFC South and want to bet it in some capacity, I think the Panthers might add both of Adam Thielen and DJ Chark in the next, you know, this isn't like a scoop or anything. It's out there on the interwebs. Like, you got to bet before these things happen because people see it and then go jump on it. You can't wait till after it happens.
Speaking of before things happen, the two other receivers, and you alluded to this, Brad, that are out there that have been linked to just about every team because of their name status, are DeAndre Hopkins and Odell Beckham Jr. OBJ tweeted out, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, I'm not asking for 20. I just don't think 4 is enough. Basically saying, you know, the rumor was that he was asking for 20 million a year. And he's saying, no, but, you know, I deserve more than 4 million. You know, same, basically, is my response to that. But, it is really interesting. I think most NFL fans would say I would rather have OBJ or DeAndre Hopkins than Brandon Cooks. So I guess the question to you guys, and I'll start with you, Arjun, here is, like, do you agree with that? I think Brad does, especially with respect to the Cowboys. And where do you think OBJ slash DeAndre Hopkins should go?
Yeah, so I'm not sure that OBJ is a $20 million receiver. I know he said
he's not sure.
Yeah. I mean, he could, like, we obviously know the upside he has, but coming off another ACL year, he misses an entire season. Like, we just don't know what type of receiver he is. You know, we'll probably know after the first couple of games, but in terms of, like, landing spots, you know, I know a lot of people kind of like the Chiefs to kind of make that move, but if there was anything that I think this season told us about the Chiefs is that they don't need to make this type of move to be successful. I don't think Brett Veach wants to mortgage the future to win now when your window with Mahomes is his entire career. I also don't think any of them make sense for the Cowboys now. Again, like I said, Cooks and Gallup are under contract for the next 2 years at the minimum. And so is CeeDee Lamb. So it's not like they're going to have a need at receiver. Obviously depth is important, but I don't really think Odell or DeAndre want to go into backup roles. I still, think the Jets could make some sense. I know there was kind of reported that Aaron Rodgers wanted Odell Beckham. And I think Aaron Rodgers did say it's more that he just wants a good receiver than he really wants Odell specifically. But I think one more team to keep in mind is also the Patriots. And I talked about it in terms of drafting Jaxon Smith-Njigba, but Belichick has done some things in, the past couple of years that I think we haven't seen before. I don't think he would have ever paid Juju like he did this season. He usually buys low on players, not really when they're at the top of their market. And I thought if there was ever a time for him to sign Juju, it would have been last year. So I think he could still try to retool that receiver room. I don't know if DeAndre makes a ton of sense, but Odell makes a lot of sense. They do need an elite separator with Parker being the jump ball guy, Juju being the slot guy, and then Odell being the separator. I don't necessarily think DeAndre makes a ton of sense there. So yeah, I think Jets and Patriots make a lot of sense. Otherwise, the Bears would have always made a lot of sense, but now that I think their receiver room is kind of full, Brad can maybe elaborate more on that, but that's where I kind of see it right now.
No, I see it the same way. I'd be surprised if Bears are in these waters. I think with OBJ, he would make more sense for the Chiefs, where if they said, hey, look what we just did for Juju, like you're talking about. Look what we just did. A guy came in on a one-year flyer for 3.75 base value, whatever it was, walked out here with 10 million cash and signed a solid multi-year deal. The Patriots won. I mean, they bring in him, they do buy low on Gesicki, so kind of more what you're talking about, we're used to seeing from them. I think they arguably had done enough there. Yeah, for me, it's like the Jets with Rodgers push. Maybe the Giants are still open to bringing back Odell. I wouldn't be surprised by that one. I don't see them. The thing, too, I will say this, though. The trade value for DeAndre Hopkins went down this morning. I know they are different situations. Mm-hmm. Cooks had guarantees remaining, but Hopkins has a $19.5 million salary this year. He might want either most of that money guaranteed, like we saw with Jalen Ramsey, where there was no raise, but he got basically all of his money guaranteed. Or maybe he does want another new contract and a new extension. So there's now – I predicted Arizona would get a second. There's no shot. Anyone gives a second-round pick to get – yeah, no chance. So maybe that opens the pool a little bit of who is in the market. But when you do try to look at it and try to pinpoint it, we're talking Carolina, like I mentioned, Thielen and Chark. Maybe they say, our rookie quarterback, let's do whatever we can here, bring him in. But yeah, it's just for Odell, I know the report from Danny Rossini was he wants 15 to 20. Everyone kind of latched on 20. I'm not even sure he's getting 15, to be frank with you. The Michael Thomas deal, 1 year, $10 million flyer with incentives up to 15, I feel like is about as good as it's going to get.
I wouldn't pay more than that. The Odell one is interesting in that I think I would be looking at a team, and the Chiefs kind of make sense in that he wouldn't be their number one guy. Obviously, they have Travis Kelce there. I think it would have to be a situation, though, honestly, where Mahomes would have to go to them and be like, look, I want this guy. Because they won last year with freaking Juju and MBS. I mean, it's like you put us three out there and they've got a shot. No, we're athletic trio here, of course, but
yeah, don't sell short. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was thinking about where it would make sense. And I'm looking at places that have a bona fide number one guy, because OBJ is not that guy anymore. But I think in a situation where he is definitely not like what we saw with the Rams, if he's healthy, I think it's a really, good spot. I don't know, and I'm just going to throw this out there and see if there was a way that they could make this work. But the one that came to mind for me was actually there are two teams have a bona fide number one guy and have Super Bowl aspirations. I think that's what you're looking for if you're going to make a play at OBJ. The first is the Minnesota Vikings. No doubt about it. Justin Jefferson, number one guy. They lose Adam Thielen. I mean, name the second receiver on that team, right? Most people cannot.
It's a great point because Kevin O'Connell was with LA in LA with him too. So very good point.
Continue. And that is my second point, which is, can they work in that offense? And the answer is yes. He was on pace. He was on track to be MVP of that Super Bowl. Gets hurt. Obviously, Cooper Kupp plays amazingly well, but slides in, doesn't have to learn new offense. I think Kirk Cousins also, say what you want about Kirk Cousins, I think is a great quarterback for an OBJ. He's an accurate guy. He's going to get the ball out on time. You know, he's going to put the ball where it needs to go. And he's also not going to chirp and talk and do any of that stuff. Okay. So that's one. The second one that I really like is a team that we've talked about needing a second wide receiver for a while. And I know everyone loves Gabriel Davis. But I think that the Bills, a lot of teams in that division have made some moves. They have not. So those are the two that I really like for OBJ. I got to be honest, for DeAndre Hopkins, I'm sitting here like, I don't know. I don't know. And if you look at DeAndre Hopkins, 2020, 87 PFF grade, 2021, 79 PFF grade, 2022, 72.9 PFF grade. Now he was suspended for a lot of that. The Cardinals were a complete shit show. So who knows? But that is a lot of money, right? To pay a guy. I mean, it's, the draft compensation is going to be negligible, but it's a lot of money to pay a guy who may have lost too many steps, right? He's not a separator by any stretch. So that's the one I really struggle with. I don't know. The one thing that I kind of came up with, but I don't think they can do it, Brad or Arjun, from a like cap perspective, would be Cleveland. Because of the DeAndre or the Deshaun Watson connection.
Yeah, it's fair. They obviously are close. I just also don't know if he like fits, you know, I think they need like more speed separation. They're not going to get Odell back obviously now, but
no.
They need that kind of guy. The one name I'll throw in is Detroit. If Detroit thinks they actually are like a couple pieces away and want to truly contend, yes, I love Amon-Ra St. Brown, but he is a slot. And yes, Jameson Williams could become a guy, but based on everything we're hearing out of Detroit right now, they don't even know how bought in he is and all these things. And he's, again, he's your speed, deep down the field type of guy. If you want to have Jared Goff just throw missiles at a big, tall target, they don't have TJ Hawkins, so they don't really have a big body right now. That's the only other one I can think of is Detroit.
I do think, George, I'm with you where like I kind of thought DeAndre was like losing kind of his like separation skills. I do think we're not like too far away from him still being like one of the best receivers in the league. Like, you know, it was two seasons where one, he missed the entire second half of the year due to injury. And this past year where he missed the entire first half of the year due to a suspension. But I still think in the right situation, Hopkins could be, you know, one of the better receivers in the league. I agree with Brad that actually the Lions are an interesting spot where you don't really have that type of jump ball guy. I'm not sure if, you know, that's something that Ben Johnson needs in his offense because he does such a good job at like scheming guys open. He, you know, shows up really highly and forcing non-perfectly covered plays. But Hopkins was 18th this year in yards per out run ahead of some guys like Jamar Chase and DK Metcalf. So, you know, he could easily be a great number two. I'm not sure if he could handle playing with Kirk, honestly, just because I think, you know, Kirk doesn't do well. Kirk's done well from an efficiency standpoint, but I think from like a ball distribution standpoint, I think he kind of locked on to Justin Jefferson a lot this year. And I'm not sure if someone like Odell or DeAndre would kind of want to take a back seat there. But yeah, I agree that Detroit makes a lot of sense. And I do think Hopkins has a couple good years left. And I think, you know, the Cliff Kingsbury offense kind of ruined our perception of him as it did for most players in that offense.
That's a fair, very fair point. Do you think they would trade that? Man, probably not. They probably wouldn't trade him in the division, but I do think the Seahawks would be kind of interesting with Geno. I mean, DK can certainly separate. You think about slant and deep. I think it would be interesting to see, you know, they don't, Tyler Lockett has been good when he's on the field, but he's often injured. You know, I think that would be an interesting one. Doubt they would trade him there, but I think it's tough, man. Like you can make the case either way. You can say, oh, he's falling off, or like the past 2 years are kind of, you know, bogus because of what we've seen in Arizona.
I'll throw one more in. I think this whole conversation kind of shows just how tough it is, but one more for Odell, not for DeAndre Hopkins, but I mean, everyone wants to say, oh, Ravens, every time we talk about any wide receiver. And I know it's hard for them to add a ton, so I don't think they're going to spend capital and big money on Hopkins. But if Odell does go back to the one-year flyer route and for whatever reason doesn't want to just cash in Kansas City, you know, I think his off script stuff would work with Lamar, where if Lamar is dancing around a little bit, then he can also just kind of get open. And that would work together. But yeah, it is kind of hard to find good spots for them, you know, as of right now.
Yeah. Paying a guy 20 mil when you're not sure if he's like fallen off is asking a lot. And there's a ton. I think this underscores the other thing, which is there's a lot of receiver talent out there. And, you know, even though in a draft class where there maybe isn't that much, like, you know, relative to other years, I think it's clear that teams feel that way. Okay. Let's talk a little more broadly. We saw, I guess, one semi big move, that's happened since we last talked. I was there, Laramie Tunsil. But it seems like there's a fair amount of kind of settling down in free agency. And curious, you know, to get your guys' take on like, okay, given what we've seen right now, are there any kind of, you know, just either takeaways or actually bettable kind of takeaways from what we've seen in free agent that thus far, or like what you think might happen coming up next? Arjun, let's start with you there. What do you think?
Yeah, so I mean, I wasn't here for the Orlando Brown signing, but I do think that's like a huge signing for the Bengals. I think he is an upgrade over Jonah Williams, and it's a very interesting deal because it's kind of unprecedented for the Bengals to guarantee over 50% of a deal to an external free agent. That's just not something they typically do. But I am curious to see how that affects Jonah Williams, see where he ends up, because you know Jonah is, you know, a solid left tackle, at least an above average left tackle. And I think the possibilities that open up for him could be interesting. I don't think there's a ton of teams that need like a specific left tackle. I know we always go back to the Bears, but like, you know, they do need a right tackle, and I'm not sure if, you know, they would trade anything or if there's any tackle in the market for them. I do want to like talk about, you know, Brad always talks about like, you want to bet some of these things ahead of time. If you were someone who believed that the Bears were going to spend a lot of money, I think you would have to be a little bit disappointed in how they went about free agency, where they haven't come away with the right tackle. They haven't come away with one of the top end D tackles or three techs like we all thought they would. You know, they spent a lot of money on two off ball linebackers. They didn't really add a cornerback to a, you know, not that great cornerback room. So, you know, if you want to like bet on a team that I think has really improved their roster, I think that the Detroit Lions are a team where, you know, the rest of the division didn't really get that much better. And the Detroit added two, you know, pretty solid corners and Cameron Sutton, who I think is a underrated guy. And then Emmanuel Mosley, who has missed time for the Niners, but I think he's always been like a reliable guy. And the Lions just need bodies. So I think the Lions still have plus money. I said it like when the division futures first came out, I would take the Lions at plus money any day. And now that Rodgers is out of the division, I still really like them based on how their free agency has gone.
No, I totally agree. Is it plus 145? Yeah, no, I think it's plus 160 on DraftKings too. So there's some value out there. Yeah, I totally agree with that one. And I think it ties into your original point. So you also want to look at, and again, we're not falling for the, you know, one in March and sign a bunch of massive things, but really the teams that did well and made some smart moves to address certain holes. So you talk about Cincinnati. For me, Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh, I think all did very, very well in free agency, and Baltimore has done nothing. They're one of two teams that has not added a player from outside of their team this entire offseason, and the other team is Jacksonville, who, in their minds, traded for Calvin Ridley, so they added a number one wide receiver. So the Ravens have done nothing to add any more talent. They trade away now I'm blanking. Chuck Clark. They trade away Chuck Clark to the New York Jets, and they just had some things to address beforehand. Their defensive line is good, but you move on from Calais Campbell. Maybe he's back, but you know, the younger guys there step up and be very, very good players for 700-800 snaps again, you know, a season. I'm not really sure. On offense, they obviously do not have much besides Mark Andrews. They'll get Rashad Bateman back healthy, but you know, there's just so much kind of like negative energy coming from them, whereas the other three teams I think did so well to address their weaknesses that they at least raised the floor. I think the way you bet this potentially is see what the season win totals do come out as. If Baltimore is at like 9.5, and I'm someone who had a massive exposure on them over last year, I had them to win the division and to go over their win total. Maybe you take, if it's 9.5, you bet it right away, and it might go down to 9 with some early action.
Cleveland is plus 430 to win that division. Baltimore 2-1, and Cincinnati plus 135. I got to agree with you. I mean, as bad as Deshaun Watson looked last year, and it was so bad that they would be better off with Jacoby Brissett. I mean, they have too much talent. It's weird to see that discrepancy between Baltimore and Cleveland, especially with what could happen with Lamar. I mean, so when is that Lamar interview happening? Did you?
It's a good question. He's interviewing himself. So I guess whenever he feels like releasing it, I guess.
He is. It's weird. He's interviewing himself, but the person asking him the questions is not actually him. They just don't show him on screen. It's a very interesting situation and dynamic that's going on there. But that just seems to be getting weirder and weirder. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying that he's like not going to play this year or like he's going to sit out, but let's put it this way. There are more questions in Baltimore about their quarterback than there are in Cleveland and Cincinnati, and by a large margin. And you think the Browns and the Bengals have both improved their teams. So I like that one. You know, the one that we mentioned, Arjun, a little bit on Wednesday was Miami picking up Jalen Ramsey. Obviously, they're at plus 370. The Jets are all the way at plus 230, and the Bills plus 125. I still think that's one that that I like, just kind of relative to what's happened, because I think Ramsey's still top three corner in the league. You know, for Miami, I just don't know what they do at quarterback if Tua can't go. So
Just to talk about Miami also, I mean, I'm sure like Seth Galina does a better job at me at like explaining their defense, but Fangio is one of those guys. He wants to run light boxes on early downs. Mm-hmm. From 2019 to 2021, Denver had the third lightest boxes on early downs of any defense in the league. This season, this offseason, they picked up, in my opinion, the best run-stopping linebacker in David Long Jr. and the best run-stopping cornerback in Jalen Ramsey. They're going to live in light boxes on early downs, force you into third and longs, and then Fangio is going to go crazy with his, post-snap safety rotations, his disguises. It's going like, I think early on we'll be able to tell how well-coached this Fangio defense is or is not, and, whether we should be buying into this, Miami defense, because I think there's a lot of great pieces out there. Another, season-long bet I'm really looking to bet this offseason is Russell Wilson under passing yards for the entire season. And, just as a note, every single season-long player prop over I bet last year missed. So I'm never going to bet an over player prop again. I understand the value is always on the under there. So this is one bet I really like. And that's also based on what they've done this offseason. They've signed Mike McGlinchey and Ben Powers, coming from two of the best run schemes in the entire NFL. Last year, Ben Powers, who he didn't grade out that well as a run blocker, to be honest, but he had the fifth most snaps as a run blocker of any guard in the entire NFL. McGlinchey comes from the Shanahan system, so always have a negative pass rate over expected. To me, it seems like Sean Payton wants to establish a culture of, a dominant run game. He wants to take the pressure off Russ. He's not going to let Russ cook. So I think we're going to see a lot of running and then a lot of like third down passing from the Broncos. So I don't necessarily think Russ is going to have a ton of volume. And, I don't necessarily know what the number is going to open up at, but if it is a good number, like even over anything over like 4,000, I think I'd probably be looking to bet the under for Russ there, just based on how they've approached this offseason on top of Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy. One of them, or even both, might end up being traded.
Yeah, and they tried to sign Alan Lazard, which is another signal that you're trying to run the ball. I think they're going to run very, very, very often. That wasn't meant to be a joke about Alan Lazard. I guess it kind of was. but yeah, so no, I could not agree more. I think it's a great bet to keep an eye out when those props do come out.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, they overpaid McGlinchey based on your contract projection pretty handily. And as someone who has watched him for quite some time, like I remember McGlinchey vividly, guys, because it was the first NFL draft that I was a part of PFF for. And I was in Cincinnati and we had that crappy little studio that was like in a closet. And we're like, I think Sam and Steve or actually Sam and Chris were on camera. And I'm like sitting in this like the smaller closet within the closet, and the Niners are coming up and Derwin James is still on the board, and I'm having seizures in the back because I cannot wait. Derwin James, my favorite player in this draft class. I'm so excited. My heart is pounding out of my chest. They pick Mike McGlinchey. I melt into a complete puddle. So the fact that he's even been serviceable has been, you know, a delight. I think I'd still rather have Derwin James, but was very happy that we didn't give him $50 million guaranteed. And I think everyone in San Francisco was as well. But if you are giving him that amount of money, the way that you make it look good is you run the shit out of the ball. Mm-hmm. Because that's, you know, that's where he's going to be most successful. Javonte Williams coming back from the ACL, I wonder, they're going to have to get some other, I guess, running backs in there, right? Because they're not going to be able to give Javonte Williams that big below. But it makes a ton of sense, especially because I don't think Peyton wants to ruin or tarnish his mystique with Russell Wilson, right? So having Russell Wilson go out there and cook and then be a complete disaster, and everyone goes, "Oh, it's Sean Payton's fault. You know, he came in, he couldn't fix him." I don't think he wants to let that happen. So I'm a fan of that. Any other thoughts? Off-season win total's not out, but division futures are currently out there. Our Seahawks plus 450 now. I think we grabbed them at was it 550 or $5?
550. Yep.
Yeah. So
a lot of CLV for the people. We had the Cowboys suggested. I'm trying to think. A couple others. The Saints pre Derek Carr. We threw out there. There's been a bunch.
Yeah. Vikings. I think was 3-1. It's plus 280 now. Still kind of like that. Again, we restore the roar here on this podcast, but let's like not get carried away. It's the freaking.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about the Jets, right? It's like, oh my God, so many things to be excited about for the Jets. So bringing in Aaron Rodgers, it's like, yes, first off, Aaron Rodgers not there yet. Okay. So let's not like, it's the Jets. So there's a lot of opportunity for them to fuck this up. I don't know. The Lions, I think it's going to be a dogfight between them and the Vikings. I got to be honest.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, before we move on to the extracurricular portion of the podcast, reminder to go get involved in the printing press, the PFF betting Discord. You can find the link in the description. It's a lot of fun. It's probably the best way to get good value on bets because we can drop them in there right away. A great example of that is the Panthers pick number one overall. Now, knock on wood there that they don't trade out of this freaking pick.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in an absolute pit of misery if that happens. But Arjun, the story behind that is Brad talked about it on a podcast. And then Arjun came in and was like, guys, we got to bet it now. Dropped it in the Discord. We had people making multiple, four-figure bets on that at like plus 330. Before that trade happens. So get involved. It's the Printing Press Discord. Arjun's repping the hat, which you can get as a part of joining the club. So go make that happen and get yourself a PFF subscription at pff.com or on the PFF app and use promo code FORECAST, FORECAST, gets you 20% off. That'll get you all of the access you need to data and analysis, plus the free agency grades and tracker, which is still really valuable as free agency moves along. And of course, the draft guide, the newest version, just came out last week. It's got combine data and more advanced stats. There will be another version coming out in a couple of weeks as well. So get yourself involved and ready for the draft. And of course, you get an annual subscription. It takes you all the way through fantasy and betting for next season. So highly recommend. Okay, we talked a little bit about F1 at the top. So I won't rehash that. Let's talk a little March Madness. Brad, it is redemption time. What was it? So it was Texas A&M. I don't mean to like bring up bad things here. It's college basketball. So like shit happens. Texas A&M did not come through. I forget what the other one that we talked about was, but
neither bet was even close. If we're being honest, the issue is I had Pitt in the morning pre-podcast. Now I'm just going to make some stuff up that no one can back check. Mm-hmm. It was a rough day. It was two very bad bets. I do apologize. This is March.
We win, we lose as a team. That's what happens.
Right. That's right.
So, I don't know if this podcast will come out in time, but we've got some interesting games on the slate. I was talking about this before the podcast, fairly Dickinson, the 16 seed. They beat Purdue, the biggest choke artist in human history, the softest, most pathetic. I don't, I, apologies to anyone out there that's like a Purdue, like went to Purdue. But like, can you imagine being like a Purdue fan? Like, what in what world are they? Anyways, bunch of soft peasants, and they lost to Fairleigh Dickinson. Fairleigh Dickinson is now a 15.5-point underdog to Florida Atlantic. I don't know, team of destiny. I'm riding with FDU.
FDU over FAU plus, yeah. No, I mean, I think you have to, right? Even though they shouldn't even be in the tournament. It's crazy. For Purdue to lose to a 15 last year and a 16 this year, never, ever, ever, ever see that again for as long as society exists. It's truly, truly remarkable for the Boilermakers.
The best part was they had, so Zach Edey is like 7'9", and the center for Purdue. And every single time they threw the ball into him, like the best thing about college basketball is that like they spend a ton of time playing college basketball, like practicing, but they still have no idea how to do like basic shit. So, like they can't break a press. Like if you're down 10, just start pressing because the other team's going to completely melt. They have no idea what to do. And the other is like the entry pass to the post. So they throw the ball up to Zach Edey. He's not looking at the guy behind him. The Fairleigh Dickinson just runs a guy up who's not guarding him. And just, you know, gets an arm in the way or like picks his pocket after he catches the ball. They did like 10 straight times.
They won the game with it, basically. Yeah. They were up three, I think. Purdue has the ball. They pickpocket up five. Game was pretty much over at that point.
It was insane. They did it every single time. Like it, you know, maybe, I don't know, have a different idea there. But yeah, Arjun, any thoughts on FDU or otherwise?
I don't. I think you guys covered that well. I do want to ask Brad if he caught any of the Vanderbilt Michigan game last night.
Of course, watched every minute, and I was going there before you were going there. The doors are down 8, George. 65-57. Rattle off 9 straight to beat Arjun's Michigan Wolverine. 66-65 in Memorial. Oh, what a game. What a game. Thank you for bringing that up, Arjun.
Yeah. No, I brought it up because I affiliate with like Michigan football. I do not affiliate with Michigan basketball at all. Ooh. I think that I hate watching them. The coaching there, the fact that they've lost like so many one score games and the fact that they were up 8 with a minute left in college basketball and still lost. I mean, it's incredible because I've been like fading Michigan like all year. They actually have like a pretty good ATS record, but anytime it comes down to the clutch, I'm always betting the other team. So I had Vandy moneyline pregame. They're down like 8, like 3 minutes left. I take them like plus like 6.5. And I'm like, okay, they're probably going to cover. The fact that Michigan lost that game is just insane. Like, I mean, I stopped watching Michigan basketball after like my freshman year. Cause again, it's just a really boring style of basketball, but Brad could probably, you know, go into detail better than me. That was one heck of a loss by Michigan.
They did not know what to do. I mean, it was three turnovers. Yeah. And like, they were all just like, they just forgot how to do the basketball. Like it was bad. It was really, really bad. Oh, well, you get me fired up now. Yeah. So that was fantastic. I don't have any NIT leans. I do. I'm trying to come back with a winner for the people in the NCAA tournament. It's tomorrow. I'm glad you mentioned pre-show, George, because I might be too late for tonight, but I did have a play like tomorrow. So the NCAA tournament likes the Mountain West a lot for some reason. They always seem to. I'm not betting on that and conference stuff, but nevertheless, San Diego State, they're a solid team. They're up there in KenPom, top 20 team in KenPom, but they are 70th in adjusted offense, and Alabama is 3rd in adjusted defense in the country this year. And Alabama is a wagon. I mean, Darius Miller, the best player in the country at this point. So honestly, I think he's gonna be a top 3 overall pick. You know, if the basketball only is the situation there. But anyway, so Bama's minus 7 tomorrow against San Diego State. You think he's gonna be the 2nd overall pick, Arjun? Is that what we're getting at?
I met up with someone this past week, an NBA staff member, we got around to talking about the draft, and they said they would take Brandon Miller at number 2.
Wow.
I'm scouring DraftKings to see if they have any draft props. Yeah, so they actually do have 2nd overall pick, and Miller is now plus 185. I think I might have to put some money down on that.
After. What's –
Wembanyama's probably like minus $1 billion to go first. I think him and Darius. Wait, go ahead.
Scoot Henderson, number 2. Right?
It's Scoot Henderson, I think. Yeah. So that's George. That's the big conversation now with the basketball heads is like, is Brandon, I said Darius Miller, is Brandon Miller the better player now, the number two overall pick? And there's a lot of buzz there. And he's been, I mean, he's phenomenal. He's a phenomenal player. They're a well-coached team. Their defense is good. They can score when they need to. You need good guard play and good wing play come tournament time. They have that in spades. So yeah, -7 against San Diego State. Sorry, Austin Gale, if you're listening. It's the end of the road for San Diego State. I think tomorrow, I like Alabama.
And Henderson, by the way, is playing in the G League right now. He's like 6'2", 6'3", Sterling Scoot Henderson, and he's playing in the G League. And this dude is a man. Like he's like the Austin Eckler of G League prospects. The dude is absolutely shredded and has like a mean streak to him as well. I think Wemby is an absolute stone cold lock to go number one. That's interesting. I need to watch more of Miller, but I would have initially said that it'll be Henderson.
It's been a recent push, George. We'll see, but it's been a recent kind of buzz the last couple of weeks. You know, Arjun's got his NBA staffer sources tapping into. So you know,
it is interesting though, because you could imagine if Alabama does have a deep run here. So think about betting things before they happen, right? If they have a deep run here, that's going to be a real showcase probably for Miller. There's not a lot of very good prospects left in this. So, you know, bet it now and then prosper. The other thing is that there are a lot of point guards in the league. And I think this is something that we're seeing in the NBA where, yeah, like Ja Morant is, you know, it's great if you can have Ja Morant, interesting one to talk about right now. But like, if you can get a guy that is truly a wing scorer, right? That is tall, that is athletic, that is going to be a more valuable asset to you long term than will be a point guard. So I think you can make that case there as well, which I like. NBA and NFL draft props here. The forecast. We've got the Masters coming up. Was that April, like 8th and 9th? So we'll get ourselves ready for that as well. Go drop into the Discord, get yourself PFF subscription. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll see everyone on Wednesday. Peace out.